You're listening to a football fans podcast from the people behind CelticUnderground.net. This is me, Harry Brady, and I'm going to be chatting with Mark Cooper, and it's been recorded straight after the defeat in Paris against PSG. What did you expect me to play? I know some of the music snobs online have been very critical of the fact that the fans have chosen an Atomic Kitten song to use to extol the virtues of Michael Lustig, but my own concept or thoughts are he had no song last week, so any song is better than no song. Anyway, so it's Atomic Kitten, which is the, if you've not heard it, that's the song for Michael Lustig, which ironic I decided to play that tonight when he's gone off injured pretty early. We've got the League Cup final on Sunday and PSG has just taken place. I'm sitting here and the Ashes still hasn't started yet on Wednesday night into Thursday morning. So it's fresh after the game. Mark Cooper and I chan through it. Don't try to be too negative because, spoiler alert, we knew that Celtic were going to lose this game back in September when the draw was made, or August, whenever it was, for the Champions League. So, anyway, enough of me. This is Mark Cooper with me, Harry Brady. So I'm joined now by Mark Cooper. I'm looking, BT Sport are still showing the highlights. I mean, there's a lot of highlights, there's 8 goals to be shown, so it might be going on for quite some, the rest of this podcast. So it's straight after the game. How you doing, Mark?
Well, firstly, thank you for getting me on after Paris Saint-Germain away, as you did after Bayern Munich away.
Did I?
Can you just give me an easy Hamilton at home, 4-5-0?
Well, I'll get you on. I'll tell you what then, I'll get you on when I come back from the Anderlecht in 2 weeks' time. I'll get you on. Okay. And, we'll really know, and then if we're out of Europe, we'll really know you're a Jonah, because it means Anderlecht have won 4-0 or 5-1.
Yeah. Can they. I really should have looked this up before, but if they beat us, everyone keeps on going on about it, they have to beat us 4-0. What if they just beat us 3-0?
I think you're right, if it's 3-0, then it goes, the head-to-head changes to being your goal difference in the group. Right.
So I'll just have a quick scan down to see how the group is apart from that.
Well, I don't think they've conceded 75,000 goals in the group stages as we have tonight.
They have.
Have they?
We're minus 12. Oh, wait. We're minus 12 and they're minus 16.
But if they scored three goals, they'd be minus 15 and they'd be minus 13.
Yeah. So Anderlecht 2-0 up at Parkhead with 25 minutes to go is going to be interesting.
Before we start, let's start on a positive. I texted you and I put it on, well, I WhatsApped you, and I put it on Twitter. Moussa Dembele will score tonight 3-1. I thought the odds were crap at 3-1. Uh-huh. Having said that, I was convinced he would score, so maybe the bookies were. Knew what I knew, which was Moussa Dembele was going to score.
It was quite interesting because the corner we earned was completely their fault. They just had a crazy pass. It seemed as though they weren't on it at all from the start. I know, yeah, I'm basically analysing 45 seconds of football.
like a radio commentary. 30 seconds gone. So, Willie, how do you see the game going so far? Exactly. Well, Celtic have been mainly on top for the first 30 seconds.
And it's so hindsight as well. I'm going, yeah, you could tell they weren't on it. But I remember when Incham hit the corner, and I usually hate kind of complicated corners. I usually like an in-swinging ball in between the penalty spot and the 6-yard box for about four people to kind of, you know,
You know as well. You know as well as I do that statistically, that type of corner produces one goal every 50 corners. Right? They're actually, that type of corner's not very good. However, I, like you, don't like the fancy ones because it always looks like the only player who knows that we're going to be playing the fancy one is the guy taking the corner kick, and everybody else is waiting for your in-swinging corner.
But just to contradict myself here, and this isn't hindsight, as soon as he hit the ball on the floor, I thought, oh, I like that. Because it wasn't like he was passing to someone 2 yards away who's going to put in the same ball but, you know, being closed down. It was like a drilled pass, and there was something about the kind of surprise of it within a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something quite kind of like cool about that, like the Paris Saint-Germain players weren't properly into the game, and then you see Dembele kind of come up towards it, he gets a good strike on. Now it did take quite a big deflection, actually. I'm not sure if it was I haven't seen it properly again, but I'm not sure if it was going in or not. Maybe it was going near at the near post or something. But yeah, my dad at halftime, my dad texted me going, what a great 8 minutes that was.
Do you know, at halftime on BT Sport, Hartson said something about, but it almost, that goal almost made Celtic go within their shell. I thought the complete opposite. I genuinely thought, even after PSG were 2-1 up, I still thought we looked like we could score a second goal. Every time we came forward, we looked like we could score.
Yeah, there was even a little moment, so it must have been, you know, like 5 minutes after that goal. There's a little moment before they got their equaliser that we had quite a bit of possession around their box.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe someone had, maybe it was in Cham, had a block shot or something like that. Something happened like that. And I remember thinking, God, imagine if we just got lucky with another like deflected shot here and we're 2-0 up. But yeah, like, same with you. We were passing it, we seemed quite comfortable receiving it in like small areas, even when there was people kind of like marking our midfielders, like McGregor was getting it and kind of like turning and passing it on to Tierney, and, you know, we were playing quite well. It's like basically what I was complaining about we weren't doing in Munich,
mm-hmm.
that players weren't taking responsibility.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, we're actually playing really well here. I made the mistake of writing that at like 2-1 or something.
Because even at 2-1, I thought the players still believed that they could compete on the park with them.
But then there was about a 5-minute period where they had the ball and we weren't really getting a touch. Like, a couple of times, Beaton was on by that point.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of times near the corner flag, I think he got it twice within about 4 minutes or something, and he tried to pass it out. And they kind of intercepted that pass or kind of, you know, hustled Forrest getting a ball or something like that. And there was just a little 4 or 5 minute period where we weren't really getting in the same rhythm again, and then their third came.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things you often talk about is the transition between when you've got the ball and not got the ball at this standard, and I always remember you talking about Charlie Mulgrew when people were at the stage of thinking,
I can't even remember what you're talking about. I'm impressed.
I remember you commenting that at the time when people were talking about Charlie Mulgrew must have naked photos of the Celtic management team to be getting picked every week, you made the point that Charlie Mulgrew's running off the ball was what was getting him picked, because he stopped better teams. When we're playing and we've got 35-40% possession, that means for the 60% possession time that the other team's got it, we need to be closing down space. And that Charlie Mulgrew did that, ran all day and closed down space. Now, for me, that is the reason why against a team better than us, Tom Rogic would be the 15th name on the Celtic team sheet. I would never have Tom Rogic start a game against a team that's better than us, because as Lawrence Donegan commented on the Buy Them In Celtic podcast, when he went to the Celtic Bayern Munich game, it was only at the game that he realised how Rogic does nothing when he's not on the ball. And so when I then start to consider the goals that we lost, part of me does wonder, it's part of the problem because in the middle of the park we are giving away too much space because we've got a player who doesn't close down space and doesn't run when we've not got the ball.
Not necessarily about Rodgers here, but I remember thinking about when we got hammered by Barcelona 7-0 and we played a back five there. And two of our midfielders were Roberts on the right and Sinclair on the left. And then it was Brown and someone else, I can't remember who it was, but say Brown and Armstrong possibly, yeah, in sentiment. And that was my biggest issue of that was that, well, there's no point having a flat back five there. If basically, like Brown and possibly it's Armstrong, basically have to defend Iniesta, Rakitic, Messi, whoever else. Yeah. But they had about like eight players just rotating and kind of,
yeah,
like they were obviously going to be able to have just space and time in to make those balls.
Yeah, it's just shooting in, and you may as well just be playing with five players effectively.
So, I remember that campaign with Mulgrew and Wanyama. I think Kyle was still with us at that point.
I don't think Armstrong would have played against Barcelona because that was the period when he looked closer out the door than remaining.
Is that right? But anyway, whoever Brown's partner was, like they did. It's probably Beaton. And they really didn't have a hope in closing down all that space.
Yeah.
Whereas tonight, like, people are going to maybe talk about the formations and talk about, you know, it's 3-5-2, it was, 3-6-1 or whatever. But really, when we're out of possession, like, quite clearly, many times you could see it was a back four. It was five pretty flat with Dembele up front, and basically that five, whoever was nearest the opponent with the ball would go and press that opponent, not get the ball but just press that opponent in possession. Yeah. And the other four were just kind of like basically in a flat line waiting for, you know, like their player to get it or a runner to go past them or whatever. The actual goals themselves, like, I don't think we can be bothered or our listeners can be bothered listening to like analysis of all seven, but they were pretty weak. Like, yeah. Brown makes a mistake, the initial mistake,
yeah,
in giving the ball away, and then annoyingly immediately he makes a lunge for it. But he kind of slightly, like, doesn't go completely through with it. He kind of lunges and thinks, actually, no, I don't want to get booked after, like, 7 minutes here. So he kind of almost withdraws from his slide challenge. But for me, the most annoying thing about it was that Rabiot kind of wants to pass to his right as Brown is making the challenge. But the pass isn't on. So then that pass isn't on and he turns to his left and he's able to then turn onto his kind of like left side and run slightly diagonally there because Brown is getting up and trying to run back into position. And then there's both Draxler and Neymar just kind of waiting on the corner of the box like pass.
Because to compound that, because Brown's gone out of position, Lustig then sees that we may be overloaded in the middle, and as you say, the immediate threat is for him to play it out to his right. So Lustig tucks in to deal with the fact that he's going to play it out right. But then he turns and Lustig's got three people behind him. And then Craig Gordon could have done better.
It's that kind of, going back to the Barcelona game, a year and a bit ago. It's that kind of thing where there's no calamity anywhere. But you're hoping if De Vries has nine shots against him that there aren't going to be seven goals going in.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same tonight, where like there was no goal that was like crazy, you know, like a really bad you know, not saved by Gordon, a really bad attempt by Gordon. But at the same time, it's like, you know, how many shots did they have?
Yeah.
actually.
No, that, I get your
point. That in itself is terrible after just being beaten 7-1.
No, but I get your point. It's like when we lost 5 goals to Art Media, there wasn't a single goal that I felt was David Marshall's fault.
Yeah, exactly.
But 2 months later, you thought to yourself, see, if Arthur Boric had been in goals in that game, we wouldn't have lost 5 goals. There wasn't a goal that you could say, and this is the one he would have saved, and this is the one that wouldn't have gone in. They had 10 shots on target and 7 goals.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, we had 1 shot on target and 1 goal. So, but no, I get your point. I suppose your point is what happens when a superior team plays an inferior team. There's not one, a lot of the time, there's not one individual point where you turn around and you say, well, the guy just mucked it up. There's lots of wee minor errors that are compounded, because once we then start to get beaten by the superior team, the mental strength of our players also starts to diminish, and they start to self-doubt. I thought Boyata started to then just make basic errors.
Completely. There's about 4 or 5 moments where Boyata kind of seemed to almost like lose his bearings a wee bit, or was kind of a bit kind of, I don't know, he wasn't very composed in a few occasions. There's a time when both Beaton and Boyata are waiting for the other to clear the ball, and it's basically on a penalty spot. I think I said this last time, or maybe I wrote it in a tweet or something, but I kind of feel sorry for Beaton a wee bit, because he isn't a centre back, and to be fair to him, he was put in against, you know, 11, Lewandowski didn't play, did he, but he's put in against Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
And he, you know, coped fine. He had a fairly decent match apart from Martinez's header. And tonight, like, he has to play against Neymar as a right back, and he's like 6'5" or something. And I thought, you know, there was the attempt where it's almost comical, where he's just kind of like grabs him like a rugby player or something, or someone playing like bulldog in the playground. But there was also quite a few times when Neymar goes at him, and he actually, you know, he took the ball off him, or at least he stopped Neymar. Like, I'm just trying to think of like other performances.
Right, let's go through the team, because I get a text at the end of the game there saying Brendan should have signed centre-halves. Now, Brendan has said he's going to try and sign 2 centre-halves in January, right? Brendan's going to sign centre-halves, and Gordon's not good enough at this level. Now, I have a bit of sympathy with all of that, and if you look back on Gordon's career playing for Hearts, he would consider 3 or 4 occasions Hearts lost games to us because of Gordon mistakes. Playing for Scotland, you can think of like the England game and a couple of our games where he has made mistakes, and playing for us, his mistakes seem to come in the big games. And it's not mistakes because he's not good enough. I think it seems to be mistakes where his mentality goes in the big games. The point I then made, though, the problem is to get Gordon is good enough for us to play last 8 Europa League football. So the problem is, if you want to get a better keeper than a last 8 Europa League goalkeeper standard, you then say to Conor Hazard, you need to go to another club because you're not going to make it with Celtic, because we've just spent £6-7 million on a goalkeeper to get a better goalkeeper. You then have to, if you want the 2 centre-halves, to get 2 centre-halves better than Simonovic and Boyata, you're looking at spending £5-6 million a centre-half. So to get a better goalkeeper and 2 better centre-halves, unless, of course, you look in South America. Have you looked into whether their passports can...
Aye, thank you.
You're at 15, 20 million quid. Unless we cast a net wider for scouting.
Well, yeah. I don't think we have to go over this, but I don't think it's that much. Like, it's like saying, you know, when Van Dijk was at Groningen, how on earth could you buy a centre-back for £2 million who's going to be good enough, you know, for the elite of Europe? Or Wanyama for 900,000? Like, the players who are going to be high-level Champions League standards. In fact, I am going to go. I am going into it now, after saying I wasn't. But here's my kind of overall point about the whole scouting thing, is that the players who are going to be high-level players in the Champions League in, say, 7 years' time or whatever, a lot of them are going to be Spanish, a lot of them are going to be French, a lot of them are going to be Italian, German and English. We can't get them. Mm-hmm. But there are going to be Croats, there's going to be Serbs, there's going to be Uruguayans, Argentinians and whatever, who are in a very limited window, are available. So we should be looking there. So that was only, I take your overall point.
Yeah, but the counter to that would be, Wanyama wasn't, I always go back to this, Wanyama wasn't a first choice pick for 6 months.
Yeah.
And the counter argument to that would be, we should be trying to make our young players, those players.
Yeah.
And what makes, we go and sign a Croat at 20 years of age.
Yeah.
Because he's already played 2 years of first team football, 18 to 20. We then bring him in here at 20, and he continues that development, and we then sell him for £10 million at 23.
Simunovic.
That's the concept, right?
Yeah.
Well, the argument would be, should we not be getting our Tony Ralston, our Kieran Tierney, as we've done with Tierney and we've done with Ralston, into the first team at 18, and then by the time they're 20, they're as good as the Croat is at 20 because they played the same amount of first team football.
Yeah.
And then,
but you yourself, you yourself know the answer to that. That if you have an exceptional kid,
yeah,
then you shouldn't block his path. But that if you look in the like two or three age groups below the first team, if there's no centre back there,
no,
for the next, like down to like the 17s, well, you know, like,
yeah, we've got no centre backs.
Yeah, so you have to buy him.
Yeah.
Whereas if now I know this is my monthly Mikey Johnson mention, but if you have a player like that and you buy in Johnny Hayes for £1.5 million, then that does stop his progress even a little bit. Like
you bring Patrick Roberts in for a 12-month
loan. Now I agree that Celtic, being the club we are, we should be going into the Champions League with two starters that are better than Mikey Johnson, or, for an example, is currently, as a just turned 18-year-old or whatever. Possibly even three players. Mm-hmm. But a fourth one as well, it just kind of, who's, you know, like 29 or, you know, almost 30 or whatever. Come on. Like, he can come on for like the last 15 minutes of SPL games. And for me, he should be like, I think it would be preferable to send Hayes on loan to a championship club with a hope to sell him in the summer and allow Johnson to be playing, you know, coming on every so often, whatever. Anyway.
Let me put some points here that people, mates of mine sent me messages during the game. First one I got from someone is that Brendan Rodgers.
You only have about two friends. So
I know, so
I'm
worried.
And I'm one of them. And I didn't send you a message.
And you didn't send me a message, so you know where the other one's from. So, first one was actually, I did get a message from someone when the fourth goal went in saying, our record defeat in any competition is 8-0. just to let you know, this wasn't a record Champions League defeat either. The two record scores in the Champions League are 8-0. Liverpool against Besiktas and Real Madrid against Malmo. Unfortunately, I did have to Google that tonight just because we were getting close. The record goal-scoring game was 8-4. Anyway, first one I got in was Brendan Rodgers is tactically naive at this level, thinking he can go toe-to-toe with these teams. What's your thoughts?
Were there any other messages within that to provide a bit more context? Like, what was the guy's complaint?
Well, the guy's complaint because we were getting beaten before one at that point.
Okay. Now I've got it.
It was basically when the fourth goal came went in. Brendan's tactically naive at this level. We get thumped 5-0 at home by PSG. Nobody's thumped us at home like that before in Europe. We get thumped 7-0 by Barca away last season. Nobody's done that. Brendan's not learning. He's tactically naive. That was the...
Okay, so we're recording this like literally about like 10, 15 minutes after the game's finished.
Yeah.
So neither of us know any of the analysis. I suspect people are going to say that we were too open, you know, and whatever, we're too attacking, blah, blah, blah. The actual formation, there are two things. There's a players in the formation. The actual formation, when we didn't have the ball, as we said before, was basically a back four, which is made up of a very good left back, Simunovic, who's basically, he has been injured for what, the last...
I think
the last game he and Boyata played was away at Anderlecht. Boyata, and for most of the game, an Israeli midfielder.
Yep.
So you have that as a back four. As when we didn't have the ball, we had five across the middle. Basically as a wall with, as I was saying before, like one guy going to press whenever it was near his kind of direct opponent. I don't know what more someone would want than a 4-5-1. But then if you go on to the players, okay, well, we don't have... Possibly you could say that I want Celtic to play Brown... Boué, who else is going to close down space?
Armstrong.
Maybe Armstrong.
Yeah.
Possibly you could say that.
Yeah, instead of playing Forrest and McRogic, you could have played, you could have started with Kouassi and Armstrong. So it's a very flat five in the middle.
Yeah, and then when we have the ball, there are much less passing options. Like, I remember us going away to Benfica and we played 4-4-2, and I think we're beaten either 2-1 or 3-1, and Samaras got a headed goal.
Yep.
From a corner, and basically the midfield were four centre midfielders kind of across a line. And as soon as we got the ball, we tried to punt it 50 yards up the pitch for Samaras and Hooper to kind of chase after it and hope we get a throw-in out of it.
Yeah.
It was pretty dire stuff. Now, I don't want Celtic to be playing like that. Like, there's a limitation to... Like, that Benfica team wasn't a great Benfica team, and they were passing it around us, and, you know, like... It was pretty uninspiring. We know we don't have the players to play, you know, go toe-to-toe away from home with Real, Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern, whatever, just now. We kind of know that. And I don't think tonight's performance was, you know, acceptable, but it was predictable.
So if we do go,
you know, like 4-5-1 and just pack the midfield with kind of gritty defensive midfielders, okay, we get beat 4-0 instead of 7-1. And then we play, you know, next week against Motherwell in the Cup. And instead of having midfield options of McGregor, Rodgers, blah, 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 we have
five gritty midfielders and maybe one half-decent guy with quality.
And we grind out that game 1-0 or 2-1 or something.
Because that was the other point, because I then followed up that message to say, well, part of the problem is we don't have a squad built to play park the bus football. They're not training every week to play park the bus football, and we just don't have the personnel to be playing park the bus football. To which I then got another reply from somebody else. It was a WhatsApp group saying, well, why did we spend the whole summer chasing Roberts? Should we not have been going after that type of player?
Uh-huh.
So what would be your response to that?
Well, Brown's going to be our defensive midfielder. If Rodgers wants a particular vision of how to play, Brown is going to be that kind of pivot midfielder that the game runs through him.
Mm-hmm.
Something I find interesting is that Rodgers, so maybe about this time last year, was starting to talk about needing a player with a final pass. And we signed, shortly after that, we signed Aboué for 2.5.
Yep.
And then, again, he seemed to reiterate that in a couple of press conferences, like, say, sometime around like February or March or something.
Yep.
And shortly after that, we bought Ncham for 4.5 million.
Yeah.
I don't think the description I had in my head of what this player was going to be through his quotes and those two players are pretty far apart. And they both have some quality.
I tell you what's interesting about that, considering his game time has been reduced, particularly of late, the player with the most number of forward passes in the SPL in domestic football is Scott Brown, followed by Ncham.
Okay.
So he is making forward passes. I suppose the argument is, depends how deep he's playing. If he's playing very deep, then he can only pass forward.
Who are you talking about now? Ncham?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the point is, he is making forward passes in...
Yeah,
he maybe needs to play more too.
You can see, it's funny, I don't think it's black and white with Ncham at all. Like sometimes when you see like Twitter comments, conversations, and you see people like either criticising him, and then, you know, other people saying, you know nothing about football, whatever. Like,
you've been reading too much Hellboy tweets for that one.
You can definitely see quality in Ncham, but so far, his passing is pretty inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit infuriating, because sometimes it's like, and the same with Anderlecht as well, sometimes it's kind of without any pressure. Like, you can understand when a player's kind of got two players around him and it's more difficult to make a pass and he's been rushed into it. But sometimes, like, he'll just make a like completely straight pass. And yet, like, you're trying to kind of work out this player who you've just seen kind of roll one of, you know, the opposition and bring a ball forward,
yeah,
and hit a kind of like fast, accurate pass into someone's path or whatever. So it's kind of difficult to kind of reconcile the two things for people, I think. I can barely remember your question at the start. I'll say that
it was why then, if the problem is we don't have the right players in the squad to play the type of defensive football that you, or the type of football that they were advocating in a game like tonight, why did we spend the summer chasing Paddy Roberts and not go after the type of player who could then slot into a defensive...
Okay, but at the same time, we did buy someone in January, and we did buy a £4.5 million player from Serie A / City.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've spent £7 million on two young guys there for centre midfield.
I mean, Mike,
it would be pretty weird if we bought another guy.
yeah,
another first team pick after those two.
My point to that was also our current squad is last 16, I believe, last 8 Europa League level.
Right.
So to qualify for the Champions League, we've got the right squad. We've got, you know, obviously we all know we need to sell centre-halves, but the concept of the squad, if we augment it with centre-halves, is the type of players we need to qualify for the Champions League. It's the type of players we need for domestic dominance, and it's the type of players we will probably need that will get us to the last 16, last 8. So what we're really saying is, but we don't have any players who can stop us getting a hiding in Champions League when we play the top two, the best sides. So we don't have enough. We don't have players for 4 games.
Yeah, but those are the most important games.
Oh,
like okay, for the first 2 years, I think basically everyone, kind of accepts that this is a process.
Yeah.
That how long ago now? When we played Molde.
Uh huh.
Like we were a poor European team. We were worse than Molde. It wasn't that Molde beat us. We were a worse team than Molde. And they showed it when they came to Glasgow and quite comfortably beat us.
Mm-hmm.
We were that level of European team. And I know we might win the Scottish League and stuff, but the Scottish teams, when they're playing a team from Luxembourg and a team from Malta and a team from Latvia and whatever, they're going out. Yeah. So this process that Rodgers took a team at that level, who were just, you know, put out in penalties by a team in the lower division,
mm-hmm,
and he's got us up to a level in how long is this now? What, 2 years now?
18 months.
18 months that can beat Anderlecht 3-0 away. And what, in the previous campaign, so within 6 months, he could draw home and away with Man City and, you know, have 2 other decent performances, like Mönchengladbach away and Barcelona at home, were, you know, pretty competent performances. So 4 competent performances, decent performances. This season, with the draw we got, Stevie, you know the guy Stevie Jackson on Twitter, he was saying like he can't comprehend how people still won like a Real Madrid or something.
I saw that earlier today. Yeah.
He's completely right. It's completely illogical.
We want a group like we have to. Trump.
Yeah, our hope. We basically have a 3-8 chance of getting a Russian Portuguese champion, or I can't remember the other slightly weak country that isn't in the top 5. And then all of pot 2 are basically, you know, Dortmund, PSG, blah, blah, blah. And the fact that we got, in 2 years running, we got 2 elite teams. I think we are like pragmatic enough to know that there was something like a 5% chance of us qualifying for the last 16 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, this is progress, as long as there's no calamity against Anderlecht. This is progress to get into the Europa League after Christmas. And hopefully this will be another kind of growing process, in a way that when Lennon's team went to Rennes, Udinese and the other club I've now forgotten, those games kind of allowed the team to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that will be the situation after Christmas, that we'll play someone who's basically on our level, like, I don't know, the 4th or 5th best team in Germany or whatever, or a decent Portuguese team, and we'll knock them out. And it'll give us confidence, you know.
I mean, that was one of the other questions somebody sent me tonight was, well, not a question, the comment they made was, I'm beginning to wonder whether qualifying for the Champions League is worth it, apart from the money. And I know football's about how your experience of being on a fan and being on the park, but there was a part of me that thought, in modern football, money is the be all and end all to be able to then develop the team. So you can't, apart from the money, it, you know, for me, the ideal is this season if we beat Anderlecht. That's the ideal for us. Play Champions League fun, money to scoop in the money, Champions League football to scoop in the money, and then drop to Europa League where we are playing at our standard.
Yeah. At this stage in our kind of, in Brendan's kind of cycle or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I agree.
And
but if you're not in the Champions League,
yeah,
it's different for people who are not in Scotland. If you're not in the Champions, like for me, living in Argentina, if Celtic aren't in the Champions League, for Argentinians here, they don't exist. When we're in the Champions League, it's going to be fairly humiliating with all my pals seeing 7-1 or something. But the fact that Celtic are on TV every other week now, because we're in the Champions League, that across the world gives us a level of prestige that just isn't attainable in a Europa League.
Which gives us more money and also makes players want to come to us because we are playing Champions League football, which puts them on the Champions League stage because, as you point out, they only come, well, as we all know, they're only coming here as a chance to go somewhere else. And if they're not playing Champions League football, nobody sees them.
Yeah.
And then you want to drop down to Europa League and win a couple of games and get some Europa League points, so the next season we're a pot three team instead of a pot four team. And so we've got an even better chance of finishing third. And maybe the following season we're a pot three team and actually can compete for finishing second. I mean,
yep.
Despite the hammering, I'm a bit more pragmatic about it. As we said before we came on, I expected, as soon as the draw was made, I expected us to get beaten and beaten well by PSG. Now, nobody wants to get beaten by this type of scoreline, but there is an element of, I fully expected us to lose upwards of 4 goals when we played PSG in Paris. And our competition was against Anderlecht. Based on our seeding, we should finish fourth in this group.
Yeah.
So if we finish third, we have exceeded our seeding. I think that's the way we've got to be looking at it. Would you do anything differently to set up the team tonight?
No. I would have had Armstrong instead of Ncham.
Right.
Because he has more energy and he'll be able to cover space better, I think. I've no idea about stats about, Ncham's interceptions or whatever, but in that kind of Charlie Mulgrew way, that basically just tell him to be like screening, you know, like any passes and whatever. That would have been. And Ncham for the first 25 minutes was pretty good, I thought.
I thought the team in general, up until they got the third goal, was all right.
Yeah.
Problem was, once they got the third goal for a period, we chucked it. And then, of course, they took the foot off the gas. And then to score 3 goals in, what was it, 3 minutes or something?
Yeah. The Argentinian commentator described our defence as a flan.
A flan?
A flan. we were pretty passive again.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not midfielders, but you know, like the defence, like, I'm slightly like a broken record here, but it did need a bit more aggression and kind of intensity. Like, what? I think it was Mbappe's goal, maybe that was the third one, when it's a pretty mediocre ball into the box, and one of their players kind of does a pass in the box from just camera side of the penalty spot, and he passes it across to the far side for Mbappe. And Mbappe had a bit of time as well to put it in. And even like, so like their second goal as well is basically what? Neymar couldn't get anything from Tierney for about, like, it's a little 10-second period where they were kind of, like, facing each other. And, like, Tierney was, like, covering or any kind of, you know, chance. So basically, Neymar just passes it to the corner of the box from the like corner flag, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Draxler then switches it to the other corner of the box, and Dani Alves has come up there, and he floats in a diagonal. Uh-huh. And Neymar, who's been on the corner flag, is running in on that diagonal ball, yeah. And he and Mbappe kind of, you know, bundle it across into like stuff. I haven't seen that back again, but so I don't know. You know, possibly you could say like Tierney, should be winning that header against Neymar or whatever, should be covering him, but also like the centre backs, like. It isn't. Remember, like Bobo in the UEFA Cup run. I just have this image of like Balde against like Stuttgart and away at Celta Vigo of just heading everything away. I think he won Player of the Year that season when we had like Larsson at our peak. I think Bobo won at least a Fans Player of the Year. We do need someone who's kind of like aerially dominant in the box. And possibly, you know, it slightly goes against my whole, you know, theory about, you know, like, it seems a bit too highfalutin, but my kind of, what I want the club to be doing, like, buy to sell. Mm-hmm. But I do think possibly having a centre-back who's between, like, 28 and 32 as an organiser, like a Colo-Touré, but, like, 4 or 5 years before.
Uh-huh.
I think that could be, like, beneficial.
Oh, I agree, and I do sometimes wonder if part of the problem is, you know how obviously our players are instructed, don't just hoof it up the park, because it was, he'd mentioned it in one of our away games, can't remember which one it was, where during the game I'd noticed that Tierney, when in difficulty, hoofed it up the park. Right. Brendan actually in the post-match interview said, on too many occasions we just kicked the ball up the park, and that's not the way we play football.
Was that tonight or after the Bayern game?
No, that was after the Bayern game.
You said that. Okay.
After the Bayern game, and there was two occasions tonight where I saw Tierney hoofed out the park, and then they changed to one of the cameras that was more of a panning angle, and you saw Brendan giving Tierney a hard time for doing that. I'm sure that's part of Brendan wanting Tierney to be a better player.
Yeah,
but I do think sometimes when we are playing teams better than us, our desire to never hoof the ball up the park, so when the ball's coming in, instead of the dominant centre half heading it away, chesting it down, because he's got to bring the ball down, but he's chesting it down while he's got Neymar on him, so Neymar just waits for the guy to chest it down, takes it off his toe and run it away. I do think there's a time for a bit more pragmatism in our defending. Anyway, enough of the doom and gloom. We've got a cup final on Sunday, right? So quickly before you go, do you think this game will have any bearing on the team for the cup final in terms of the team's mentality?
It could have, you know, sometimes when I listen to people on the radio and they're like pontificating about this, I'm listening to it thinking, you don't know anything, you don't have a clue, like you don't know the internal dynamic of this dressing room, blah blah blah. We'll see in the first 20 minutes or whatever. They might be tired. Like you've mentioned about the, it isn't just a fatigue on the pitch, but the whole kind of mental process and whatever. But also the fatigue on the pitch. Like Forrest was done after what, about 70 minutes tonight. Yeah. I felt sorry for him a couple of times. And you could see it in his, not only in his running, but like when he actually got a ball, there's a couple of pretty slack passes, and you then see him kind of like having to run back like 50 yards.
But Roberts was on the bench.
Yeah.
Armstrong was on the bench and didn't get on. Sinclair was on the bench and didn't get on. So we do have three of our first team starting players who didn't feature at all.
Did you say Sinclair? Yeah,
Sinclair was on the bench and didn't come on. So I suppose that there is an argument of there's three fresh players.
Yeah.
So how do you see Sunday going?
Uh, I think it could be a pretty kind of stodgy game.
Mm-hmm.
After me kind of criticising, a Lennon team kind of going away to Benfica and then, having to play against Motherwell and only winning 2-1 or something like that. I actually think that could be the case, where we might win 2-0, but it might be slightly uninspired.
Yeah.
Just because, when you watch when we're playing at home after a Champions League game, how many times is it like free-flowing football and, very creative and whatever?
I've really put a dynamite. I'm almost crying.
So, based on this dodgy, and Motherwell are one of the better teams in the SPL at the moment.
Yeah.
So, based on this stodgy play, who's going to score the goals?
Sinclair,
right?
Sinclair and say Dembele. But I think it's quite a... It could be like quite a big game for Sinclair, because he really... he needs to get going now.
Yeah, I actually don't think the team's really got going on a number of... There's been only a few occasions this season where the team's
on
got
different
going.
Levels.
Aye.
Yeah. It's been a kind of weird, now we're not at the start of the season, but the start of the season was pretty weird with, Dembele was out, the whole defender situation.
Yeah.
And you're kind of, just struggling through these playoff games in the Champions League. And then all of a sudden, you have to play against Paris Saint-Germain at home.
Uh-huh.
You're thinking,
everything, we're not ready. And everything about the whole season seems to be, we know we're going to win the league.
Yeah.
So we're just mucking about. We're also trying to develop the squad, so we're giving people more game time, but we're still winning, not losing games and winning domestically, so that we're keeping the domestic league going. And everything's now, probably since we beat Anderlecht, everything has now been geared around, let's just make sure that we finish the job against Anderlecht and play European football after Christmas.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that really upbeat... I'm not getting you in again. with that really upbeat message, you have just said you think we're going to win the first trophy of the season on Sunday.
Yeah, with a stodgy performance.
With a stodgy performance, after you set out the circumstances that Anderlecht could get through without winning 4-0.
It's going as everyone basically predicted from the draw.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This is basically what we hoped for.
Yeah.
As you said, after getting beaten 7-1, I'm not going to be, hugely enthusiastic, but...
Shit happens.
Indeed.
Well, with that, I will see Mark Cooper. On that a positive note...
Cheers, Aya.
Cheers.
We passed upon the stair, spoken was and when, although I wasn't there, said I was his friend.
I hope that wasn't too depressing for you following the loss to PSG. Also, if you're the type of person who does like the... every silver lining to have a cloud. I hope it wasn't too upbeat and positive. I hoped it was just the right note for you. Obviously, with more podcasts along soon, decided to go with the cover of the Bowie, The Man Who Sold the World. Now, obviously, I could have gone with Lulu, but I decided to go with the Nirvana version. Anyway, enough of me. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Mark Cooper. Don't forget the Celtic FC Foundation Spirit of Christmas campaign is on just now, so go on the website, have a look. We've got the League Cup final on Sunday, first step towards the treble. Come on the hoops. Speak to you later. Cheers.
We must have million years. I'm Thank you.